This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Wednesday today. It's the day before Thanksgiving. And I'm actually leaving just a little bit early. And I'm not actually leaving from my client. I'm leaving from Jump Mania, it's called, out on South Sunshine. So there's no telling how long it's going to take me to actually get home. And so we'll see. If I run out of things to say, I'll just say, you know, I don't think I have anything else to say, and I'll just quit. It's been a good week. It's been a good week. I'm pretty close to where I wanted to be today. I probably could have stayed a couple of extra hours and finished up, but I really haven't been exercising that much in the last couple of days. My nephew has been in town for the holidays, and I haven't wanted to get on the Nordic track first thing in the morning and make a bunch of noise, keep him awake. Because the guest bedroom is right above my office, and so I really haven't been doing that, and I can really, really tell the difference when I haven't been exercising and breaking a sweat. I mean, I can really tell the difference in my stress levels, and so I haven't been exercising, and I actually am experiencing something that's fairly unusual for me, in that I've got a little bit of a headache. And that's just not usually a problem for me. And I'm thinking it's either because I haven't been exercising, or perhaps it could be because of the chicken I ate last night. I bought some chicken at the store, and I fried it up, I cooked it up last night. I really didn't fry it up. I cooked it up. And it smelled a little off. It wasn't too bad. So I went ahead and ate it. And it tasted a little off, but it wasn't too bad. I figure I'm just sort of preparing for the coming apocalypse. Because in the Philippines, they eat rotten food pretty much all the time. So I just figured, you know, in the coming apocalypse, may need to be able to see, to know exactly what you can eat, what you can't eat. So I thought, well, I'll go ahead and eat this and see how this affects me. So I've decided that when I get home, I'm going to go ahead and get on the Nordic track, exercise for a while, see if that helps with the headache, and if it does, it's just because I just flat haven't been exercising enough, and if it doesn't, maybe it was because of the chicken. We'll see. I was at Jump Mania today because my daughter and son-in-law took Clara, my granddaughter, to Jump Mania. They had heard that I'm smelling a little bit of antifreeze, too. I'm wondering if I've got a leak or it's a car or something in front of me. I don't know. Anyways, they had found out that at this Jump Mania place that adults get in free and children under 3 get in free. So it's pretty much free. So they decided they would go down and get in free, and in fact they did, and I walked in, got in free as well, and so they took Clara around and let her run a little bit and climb on stuff, and a good time was had by all. So I went and watched them for a while and carried around shoes for them for a little while, and then it was getting about time for Clara to get something to eat, so they decided they'd move on out. And I thought, well, I'll go ahead and get driving home finished up. It has been a long week. It's been a long couple of weeks. I have really been plowing along on this project that I'm working on. It all goes well, though. So, and like I said, I'm really close to getting finished up. So it's that may be part of my tiredness and the fact that I haven't been getting enough sleep at night. I've been staying up a little too late working on a few things. So, but it's good. It's good. I've been reflecting and reflecting with my wife over and over in the last few days, just how thankful we really are for all of the blessings in our lives. We are blessed. You know, God's just been very kind to us, and we've been able to do work that we are adequately equipped for so that we can satisfy the conditions of our work. Got a wonderful son-in-law, wonderful daughter, wonderful little grandbaby. You know, life is good. Life is very, very good. And really looking forward to 3 or 4 days here just to kind of kick back and spend time with family and enjoy ourselves and get a chance to do that. I have picked up a few interesting little things off of the internet. And the internet is such a fascinating place, and specifically internet memes are fascinating to me. For those of you who aren't familiar with the term an internet meme, it is an idea that catches on the internet and is spread. And once an idea like this catches on and people start spreading it, it just keeps spreading. Well, one of the memes that has spread in recent days concerns the pepper spray attack out, was it Southern California University, that some people were doing their Occupy thing where, you know, they sit and chant slogans, and the chancellor of the university had decided that she didn't want them spending the night out there, and so had taken the campus security people and asked them to go out and peacefully, according to her, peacefully dismantle the tents. And so they went out there promptly and took big cans of pepper spray and sprayed all the people. Now everybody's outraged. How dare they? One of the internet memes that has showed up about this is people have taken this picture of this officer spraying the crowd, and they've put it into other scenes and other paintings, like The Scream, which is the impressionistic painting The Scream, and they've got the officer there spraying the person in The Scream. I was looking at them, it was last night, and there's just page after page after page of these, and it's really hysterical. So that's the internet for you. I pray and hope in my life that I will never get to be so famous for whatever that I become an internet meme, because bad, I don't know. I don't know that I would want to be the center of all that attention. The other thing that I came across on the internet this week that tickled me to no end is there is some sort of regulatory agency in the European Union. And this regulatory agency that is located in Brussels has implemented a ban on bottled water manufacturers using the claim that drinking their product can prevent dehydration. So they put out a ban because they said it couldn't scientifically be proven that drinking water prevented dehydration. As you can imagine, there have been several on the internet who have taken a disagreement with this position. A And I did bother to read the whole article, and in fact, there may be some small possibility of a point they make. And I think the regulatory agency was trying to say, well, if bottled water manufacturers make this claim that our bottled water can prevent dehydration, it gives the impression that bottled water is substantially different and more special than just regular water. So partly on the basis of that, they decided they would implement a ban, which has fairly stiff penalties, 2 years in jail, yada yada. But when you read the headline that the EU bans claim that drinking water prevents dehydration, it is certainly good for a chortle, if nothing else. So anyways, last week I started talking about Boomerang, the book Boomerang, Travels in the New Third World, and I talked about Greece, and I had mentioned this week that I would probably talk about Iceland. I do have some notes that I put together. I have to admit that the podcast snuck up on me this week, or sneaked up on me, whichever you prefer, because this week is Thanksgiving, and it dawned on me on Monday that there was a possibility I was going to get everything finished that I wanted to get finished on Tuesday, so I wouldn't be in Wednesday, which means that if I was going to do driving home, I was going to need to do it Tuesday, which means I was going to have to prepare my notes on Monday. But then as Tuesday turned out, I had enough to do that I wanted to get in and work for a little bit today, which I did, and got some things accomplished. And so last night I did put together some notes. The reason that Iceland interests me is that Iceland has become insolvent. In fact, they were declared insolvent, I think, in 2008. End of 2008, sometime in there. And the reason this sparks my interest is because obviously there's a lot of talk these days about sovereign debt and about different companies having to declare bankruptcy. And the big question that always surrounds those issues is, well, what happens next? And I thought, you know, here is an interesting case, because supposedly it's already happened in Iceland. So if it's already happened in Iceland, might we be able to look at Iceland and look at what's going on in Iceland and see if we can then from that predict what might happen if the United States can't get its sovereign debt problem under control? Which, of course, if you've been listening to the news, today is November the 23rd, 2011, and the Super Committee was supposed to come back with its package for approval by the Senate and by the House of Representatives on Monday, November the 21st, and they, of course, did not. So, as I understand it, there's going to be across-the-board cuts that are going to go into place if a deal cannot be reached shortly. And this is all very fascinating. And always raises the question, well, what happens when a country declares bankruptcy? For those of you who aren't familiar with the Iceland situation, Iceland traditionally was a very conservative country. Strong Viking tradition there. They were a small country, 300,000 people. And up until just a few years ago, they basically subsisted on their fishing and their sheep. And they were a very hard-working, very sturdy, very physically fit people. And everything seemed to be going along pretty well for them. Very rich in geothermal energy. A lot of hot springs, and we'll talk in a minute about how they use that then to produce very cheap energy. So, aside from the really harsh winters up there, and the fact that it's far enough up from the equator that you get long stretches of night as you get into the winter, a fairly idyllic country. And it's interesting to reflect on the fact that you could have this going along and everything's fine, and then within really just a few years, this country is on the verge of bankruptcy. Well, what happened? What happened was the era of quote-unquote free credit, and the Icelanders figured out a few things that in essence turned the whole country into a hedge fund. The three banks, as I understand it, there were three main banks, and they were deregulated, and things started happening at these banks where the Icelanders started going on a buying spree because investors looked at the Icelandic banks and they said, well, none of these banks have ever failed. Look what a solid business acumen these bankers have. And the European Union and certain firms in the United States started extending them credit. And the Icelandic banks could borrow. And at the same time, this was in the early to mid-2000s, the influx of money into Iceland from this easy credit started driving up the prices on assets. So houses were getting more expensive, cars getting more expensive. I was watching one little video where they were saying that in Iceland they never really had rich people before. And then all of a sudden, with this influx of cash, people were buying luxury cars and buying huge homes and building huge homes. And they could get money cheaply that they would then invest in these assets, and for a time then could turn around and sell these assets for more than they invested. And all of a sudden, people were making money hand over fist because of easy credit and because of the fact that the influx of money into Iceland was driving up the prices on anything, everything. And Iceland went on a buying spree. And with the overinflated prices of things, we're able to convince investors that they were worth far more than they were really worth. And that allowed them then to turn around and buy up more assets, leveraged. There's some cute little stories about the present state of Iceland that I'll get to in Boomerang, where the author describes some of his first hours and first days in Iceland. But just by way of giving examples as to what was going on in Iceland, there is one story about a bank in London, I believe, London, England, that suddenly became aware that one of these Icelandic banks had bought a percentage of their company. I think it was 9%, just out of the blue. unbeknownst to them, it had been bought with leveraged money, but... And so the president of this bank thought this was very odd. Because he said, normally, when you're investing in a bank, you come in, you look at the bank, you look at its assets and liabilities, you try to determine its solvency, all these wonderful things. None of that had been done. These Icelandic investors just started buying up this bank. So he called the bank that was buying them up, and no one wanted to talk to him. He said, I'm so-and-so from the bank. I understand you own 9% of my bank now. And they said, yeah. So they didn't want to talk to him. So he thought, well, okay. Next thing he knows, they own like 15% of his bank. And he decides, I'm going to find out what is going on. And so he decides, he flies up to Iceland. He sits down with these guys. And his impression is they are all uniformly young. And none of them know what they're doing. And a short time afterwards, he decides that, you know, this is going to end badly. And so he resigns his position and he leaves it to them. And sure enough, it isn't much time later when the bank goes bankrupt. There's an example given in the book where one of the people that the author talks to says, let me tell you what Icelandic banks were doing, in essence. They say, let's say that you have a dog and I have a cat, and you decide that your dog is worth $1 billion, and I decide that my cat is worth $1 billion. So I sell you my dog and you sell me your cat. And now we both claim that our businesses are worth $1 billion because... that's what we paid for the animals. And so these Icelandic banks had grossly inflated their net worth through a bit of shuffling of books. And then they had invested in all sorts of credit default swaps, somewhat heavily in the United States real estate market. And when the United States real estate market tanked, so did Iceland. They just got to the place where they had borrowed money from England and from the Dutch and Holland. It's just everything tanked. It's into this environment that the author came. And he has some really interesting stories about Iceland, just from a character's standpoint. He was staying in a hotel that, I think he said, the night he rented it, there were only like 6 people renting rooms in this hotel that night. And it's this top-of-the-line, 5-star hotel. Marble floors, beautiful decor. They gave him a room up on the high floors because no one's using these rooms. Because all of a sudden there's been a crash and no one has any money anymore. And he said as he was in his room, he started hearing banging on the wall next door. And he said, and then the noises started. Says, first the banging of a bed frame against a wall, followed by various moans and high-pitched yells. The couple in the next room has returned for the evening. Their noises grow louder, but what's strange is that no matter how loud they grow or how clearly I can hear them, the words that accompany them are totally incomprehensible. Finding it hard to concentrate, I instead try to mimic the sounds coming through the wall, but when I do, my tongue is doing things in my mouth that it's never done before. The sounds on the other side of the wall are roughly those made by Sture Hobbit in Lord of the Rings Gollum, Gollum, Mordor, and then I realize it's just Icelandic. And he goes on to explain that, you know, these people are just being crushed by the debts they owe, and the only way they can blow off a little steam is to go rent a room in a hotel that they get now for 50% off and just have a romp. He also talks about the heating system, talks about the fact that the water in Iceland comes out of the ground so hot that the Icelandic waterworks has to mix it with cold water before it goes into the houses or it will kill people. And he says that occasionally when the Icelandic waterworks is fixing things, they make a mistake and they shut off the cold water and people are killed in their showers from being scalded to death. The other thing that he talks about is, I know, that's it, yeah, that's Iceland. The other thing that he talks about is the fact that at night he's hearing these things going, boom, boom, because people have bought these expensive cars. And now they don't have any money and they owe more on these cars than the cars are worth because everybody's trying to sell their cars. And people find out that the insurance policy will actually pay if their cars accidentally catch on fire. Wink, wink. So people are regularly blowing up their cars. Very sad situation. I was watching some backstory about how that after the crash that England and Holland were demanding to be repaid for all this money that I'm actually getting. I think it's the penny power or something. Oh, that's not mine. That's why there's two there. I forget. My neighbor has his mailbox near mine now. One moment, I need to back up and get my mail. And they were talking about the fact that England and Holland, I am getting my mail now, had put through these, you know, proposed a bill that would just be draconian measures and cuts and how all the people in Holland would have to pitch in because every dollar had to be repaid, and the only way that the EU was going to, the International Monetary Fund was going to help them get bailed out, is if they signed these bills. And the difficulty with Holland is that it is a small island, and so they've got to have money to buy gasoline and these kind of things, and it looked pretty dire for a while. I'm backing into my garage. And then the people of Holland just said, forget it, we're not doing this. And so they all kind of revolted, and they had, I think they called it the Kitchen Revolution, where they stood outside Parliament and banged pots and demonstrated and said, don't sign that, and eventually got the government overthrown through a no-confidence vote. Just lots of really interesting things going on. And so I went and I tried to do some research, find out, okay, what really happens when a nation declares bankruptcy? And if you're an isolated nation like Iceland, it can be bad, but, you know, the old story is you can't get blood out of a turnip or blood out of a stone. And when the money's gone, the money's gone. And it's been interesting because in all the news reports that I've watched about Iceland, where they've been describing all the potential bills that were going to be put through to force them to pay things back, the Icelanders basically said, we're not doing it. And at that point, what can you really do? What's interesting is that people have not starved. A lot of them have lost their jobs, unemployment, Last I read was at 9%, which is high for Iceland. Their unemployment typically runs about 3%, and even down to 1%. So they do have fairly high unemployment, but people are working. So they haven't gone back to any kind of a barter state. People aren't starving. So, you know, all these things that you hear about how bad it would be for a country to declare bankruptcy. At the end of the day, I'm growing more confident that there are a few things that we can do to just sort of help ourselves if we want to try to prepare for this. One of them is get rid of as much debt as possible. You know, get the slate clean if you can. Build up some cash reserves if you can. Make whatever sacrifices you need to get some money put back. And then maybe stockpile a little bit. You know, stockpile some food. And from what I've seen so far, it's survivable. Because I think there is a certain inertia to living, that there will always be sellers and buyers. And what you don't want to be is a borrower. But as long as you have some skills and you got a little money put back, and especially if you can get debt free, and you have a little food stockpiled, I don't know. It's going to be very, very interesting to see. And for me, at the end of the day, God's been so kind and so good, and I've got so much to feel blessed about that I'm not really that concerned. And like my buddy said to me one time, he said, it's not that I'm thinking about these things because I'm afraid, but just because it's a challenge. And I'd like to be able to say, yeah, I saw that coming, and, you know, we made preparations and we got through it okay. And I'd like to be able to say that too. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. Happy Thanksgiving.